in the poisoned entrails throw. Toad, that under cold stone, days and nights has 31. Sweltered venom sleeping got, boil thou first in the charmed pot. Double, double, toil and trouble. Fire burn and cauldron bubble.
George R. R. Martin is a massive fan of Shakespeare's works and has borrowed liberally characters, plots, and themes from the legendary playwright. The Three Witches of Macbeth are iconic parts of the world of fantasy and theater and are important parts of understanding that tragedy. In honor of Halloween, today we'll be focusing on just the three of them, the Three Witches, or Weird Sisters from the Scottish play. We'll take a look at how they've been used in A Song of Ice and Fire and what other influences he's drawn for his own witchy characters. To start off, we have to understand what the role of these three women occupy within Macbeth before we can move on to Martin's adaptations. The first aspect of them is their ability to see into the future via prophecy and spells. They tell Macbeth that he shall become king, while his friend Banquo that he will generate a line of kings, and both men come away rattled. In contrast with most prophetic characters, the witches offer the information unprompted at the two, and let the other hear it. By telling Macbeth that he will be king, and Banquo that he will start a line of them, the two are instantly set at odds. If Banquo starts a line, then Macbeth's reign must end first. So, he must act in order to the death of Banquo. The witches act like the classic idea of a poison chalice, that is prophecy. Or, as eloquently said by Archmaester Marwyn, prophecy will bite your prick off every time. By knowing an unpleasant future, Macbeth inadvertently creates that future by trying to avoid it. George uses prophecy in a similar way, and likes explaining his method by telling the story of a Duke of Somerset from the War of the Roses. The Duke received advice from a soothsayer that he should avoid castles. The Duke did so, successfully, until ultimately meeting his fate outside an inn called the Castle. These prophecies are nothing, though, without the mouths that speak them, and that's where the agents of fate like the Weird Sisters come in. Shakespeare did not invent the idea of three women who know the threads of fate. That concept goes back thousands of years, in particular to the Greek and Norse traditions. In Greek mythology, there is the idea of the Three Fates, or Moirai. In this prayer from Pindar's Hymn to the Fates, we learn about.
Listen, Fates, who sit nearest of gods to the throne of Zeus, and weave with shuttles of adamant inescapable devices for counsels of every kind beyond counting. Aesa, Clotho, and Lachesis, fine-armed daughters of night, hearken to our prayers, all terrible goddesses of sky and earth. Send us rose-bosomed lawfulness and her sisters on glittering thrones.
The Fates know the past, present, and future with perfect accuracy, and are known as Clotho, Lachesis, and Atropos, sometimes Aesa, the spinner, allotter, and inevitable. Clotho would spin the threads of life, Lachesis would measure the thread, and Atropos decided when it would be cut. They decided when mortal lives began and ended. And some say immortal ones as well. They're not technically gods as we understand them, much closer to fundamental parts of the world that kind of choose to have form. Even the gods and Zeus must adhere to the decrees of the Fates. In much the same way that Macbeth interacts with the witches, these three beings would often be consulted with disastrous results by those who would try to change what they hear from the mouths of fate. The three Norns of Norse mythology as well occupy a similar place. Urd, Verdandi, and Skuld represent the past, present, and future, and sit at the wells at the base of Yggdrasil.
Thence come the maidens, mighty in wisdom, three from the dwelling down neath the tree. Urth is one named, Verthandi the next. On the wood they scored, and Skuld the third. Laws they made there, and life allotted to the sons of men.
There's a lot of overlap in their functions with the Fates, as over time mythologies merge and are influenced by new ones. There's some important differences between them, most notably the flipping of their depictions by age. Clotho, in Greek traditions, is seen as the youngest Fate, depicted as a maiden and associated with new life and birth. However, Erd is the oldest of the Norns, sometimes depicted as an old woman who has seen all before. This is a key difference between Greek and Norse mythologies. Norse is shown as cyclical, while Greek is one long single path. Skuld, the future and the end, is the youngest, who feels more comfortable with the Valkyries and changing what her sisters have done before. Meanwhile, Atropos is depicted much like the modern figure of the Grim Reaper.
These are called Valkyrs, them Odin sends to every battle. They determine men's fainess and award victory. Gudr and Rota and the youngest Norn, she who is called Skuld, ride ever to take the slain and decide fights.
While the exact roles and appearances of past, present, and future change depend on the tradition, they all contain the same three roles: maiden, mother, crone. The same figures we see in the Faith of the Seven, in A Song of Ice and Fire, and from Neo-Paganism, known as the Triple Goddess. The Triple Goddess in particular is important to understanding the relationship of the three. They are not separate and apart from one another. They always work together, much like the ideas in A Song of Ice and Fire of the Many-Faced God, or the Seven who are one.
Is he like the Southern God, the one with seven faces? Seven? No, he has faces beyond count, little one, as many faces as there are stars in the sky. In Braavos, men worship as they will, but at the end of every road stands him of many faces, waiting. He will be there for you one day, do not fear. You need not rush to his embrace.
In Homeric tradition, the three fates are actually one, a concept known as Moira, who inhabits all three roles as destiny. The same for the Norns, where they can be seen as the phases of a life or time itself. The past, present, and future they represent only seem apart because of the way we experience time, constantly moving between the three phases. If you could see beyond them, a world without time, then the three become one, much like we see Bloodraven trying to explain to Bran.
Those were shadows of days past that you saw, Bran. You were looking through the eyes of the heart tree in your godswood. Time is different for a tree than for a man. Sun and soil and water, these are the things a weirwood understands, not days and years and centuries. For men, time is a river. We are trapped in its flow, hurtling from past to present, always in the same direction. The lives of trees are different. They root and grow and die in one place, and that river does not move them. The oak is the acorn is the oak, and the weirwood. 1,000 human years are a moment to a weirwood, and through such gates you and I may gaze into the past.
So to get back to the three witches, although all three see the future for Macbeth, that is not an uncommon way of understanding them. Even their name, the Weird Sisters, come from these older traditions. The word weird comes from the Anglo-Saxon word, meaning fate or destiny, which appears to be borrowed from the Old Norse word of Urdr, or the name of the Norn of the past, Erd. By calling the three witches word or weird or wayward, Shakespeare was actually referencing how these three figures are supposed to be understood. Not as separate, but as one, destiny. Martin appears to have picked up this thread when he has imported the Weird Sisters into his world. A very important difference between the ancient myths and Macbeth is that the Norns and Fates did not get involved with the world of men. They were above it, beyond it, answering when consulted, usually by gods, but not using their knowledge for changing or influence what they've decided. Closer to constants of the universe that reality depended on rather than active participants. The Weird Sisters changed that, seeking out and telling Macbeth his fate. They even get chastised for it later by the Greek goddess of witches herself, Hecate.
Have I not reason, beldams as you are, saucy and overbold, how did you dare to trade and traffic with Macbeth? In riddles and affairs of death? And I, the mistress of your charms, the close contriver of all harms, was never called to bear my part, or show the glory of our art.
Martin has imported these ideas in characters like Melisandre, who seeks out Stannis in order to inform him of his fate as the quote-unquote king of Westeros and Azor Ahai reborn, or Tyanna of the Tower, who performed a similar role with King Maegor the Cruel, and Miri Mazdor, who served Daenerys Targaryen. He has taken these fantastical, otherworldly, inscrutable characters and made them a living part of his world. Melisandre is the most visible example of the Fate Norn witch character, as she is often referred to as a red witch within the story. Much like the Weird Sisters or the Crone, she seeks out a man who would be king and tells him he will become so, and more than that, a savior of the world. But then she straddles the other two roles, becoming a mother as she births the shadows that slay Renly Baratheon and Courtney Penrose, as well as creating a new foothold of the faith of R'hllor in Westeros itself, birthing a new fate built around Stannis and herself. And then as a maiden, tries to use her knowledge like Skald to fight the future that she sees coming.
Soon comes the cold and the night that never ends. She placed the silver dish on the painted table. Unless true men find the courage to fight it, men whose hearts are fire.
Traditionally, the Norns and Fates had no interest in changing what would happen. They are just performing their roles with little preference. Although sometimes they would bring a person back from the dead, they did not interfere. There's a passion and humanity and mischief you don't see in the old myths that comes through in Macbeth and A Song of Ice and Fire. Miri Mazdor's prophecy is one made out of spite that has haunted Daenerys across multiple books, much like Macbeth.
"When the sun rises in the west and sets in the east," said Miri Mazdor. "When the seas go dry and mountains blow in the wind like leaves. When your womb quickens again and you bear a living child, then he will return. Not before."
Dany spends inordinate amounts of time thinking about this line, later becoming convinced what Miri said is true, believing herself infertile. She also interacts with another version of the Crone or Norn or Fates when she hears the prophecies of the Undying. Much like the classic trio, they give her visions of the past, present, and future.
Faster and faster the visions came, one after the other, until it seemed as if the very air had come alive. Shadows whirled and danced inside a tent, boneless and terrible. A little girl ran barefoot toward a big house with a red door. Miri Mazdor shrieked in the flames, a dragon bursting from her brow. Behind a silver horse, the bloody corpse of a naked man bounced and dragged. A white lion ran through grass taller than a man. Beneath the Mother of Mountains, a line of naked crones crept from a great lake and knelt shivering before her, their gray heads bowed. 10,000 slaves lifted blood-stained hands as she raced by on her silver, riding like the wind. "Mother," they cried, "mother, mother." They were reaching for her, touching her, tugging at her cloak, the hem of her skirt, her foot, her leg, her breast. They wanted her, needed her, the fire, the life, and Dany gasped and opened her arms to give herself to them.
Yet unlike the historical versions of these characters, the Undying attempt to capture and keep Daenerys for themselves in some kind of cannibalistic act, feed on the life she would have had, like ambrosia for fallen gods. Fallen Norns or Fates are how we should be thinking about George's use of witches and their roles in the story. Old Nan in particular is like an Urd figure, an old woman with near perfect information about the past who hangs out in Winterfell near his Heart Tree, or Yggdrasil, with its pool, much like the Well of Urd, but she's lost her sisters and her control over destiny. Much the same for Melisandre or Lady Stoneheart, versions of destiny that have been separated and scattered across the world, unable to rely on their two missing parts. These characters focus only on the past, present, or future, rather than taking the larger view that is typical of this archetype. A key of George's twist on these mythologies is that he appears to have taken away the powers of the Norns and Fates and put it in the hands of characters like the Weird Sisters, characters that use their visions of destiny and gifts for personal gain, mischief, or profit, rather than the classical ideas of unknowable forces of nature performing a function or duty. Maggie the Frog tells people their futures in exchange for their blood, and possibly coin. The ghost of High Heart asks for songs. Melisandre demands worship of her Lord of Light. Miri receives safety for her gifts. Old Nan tells stories to the Lordlings for her keep. They all face a similar challenge of how to use their gifts in this physical world. While it is a change, it's a change that deals with these very hard to fathom concepts in a human, noble way. One emblematic of George's thesis about the very core of A Song of Ice and Fire, a human heart in conflict with itself. For a much more detailed discussion of the individual mother, maiden, crone aspects of the individual witchy characters in Macbeth, I highly suggest you watch or read In Triple Aspect, Witches of Macbeth and A Song of Ice and Fire, by the voice you heard reading the quotes in this video, Shakespeare of Thrones. She did an incredible job on her takes of this topic, and will be streaming here on my channel on Halloween night to talk more about both videos and beyond. If you enjoyed this video, please remember to like, subscribe, comment, and share to help to support the channel and more content. In addition, you can also support me on Patreon at patreon.com/joemagician, where you can get benefits like early access to new videos and essays, exclusive Patreon-only content, more coming soon, outlines of streams to follow along with, and more. And to give credit where it is due. As usual, to George R. R. Martin, who created this wonderful world for us to talk about. Shakespeare of Thrones, again, who did a great job reading the quotes for his video. Again, I highly suggest you check out her blog at shakespearethrones.com and her YouTube channel, links in the description. And to Sanrixian, who once again provided the incredible art you see in this video. You can find more for her at her website sanrixian.com or on Twitter at sanrixian. Thank you again for watching.